and welcome to the Eastern Kicks podcast, a fortnightly magazine program about East Asian film, led by me, Andrew Heskins, founder and grandmaster of EastonKicks.com, and James Mudge, our leading writer.
Hey,
each episode, we'll be taking a look at the latest films, news, festivals, and often chatting to filmmakers and stars along the way. So welcome to our latest podcast in what can only be described as interesting times and quite surreal for all of us. For this episode, we're going to do a special focus on one of James's favourite film series, the Guinea Pig series.
Yes.
At the end of the programme, we'll be listening to Paul Quinn's How He Got Into Eastern Flicks, and we'll be taking a few picks from streaming services as well.
Probably a good thing for most people at this time, I guess.
But let's get on with the important question for each episode, which is, what are you drinking this time, James?
Well, I think you can probably describe this best. What do we have in front of us?
Well, we have in front of us a lovely pair of martinis, dirty martinis, as prepared by my wife, who is an expert at making them. This time around, I also have a bottle of Hitachino Knest Espresso Stout.
Oof.
What's
the strength?
That's always the question. And it is 7%. And it is actually made with coffee beans, so that should keep me going till the end of the episode.
Nice.
And for you, James?
I was kind of caught short by the virus outbreak, and I was kind of reduced to buying a bottle of First Cape special reserve. Not sure how special the reserve is. One of the some of the few things left on the shelves, and I also have a trusty hip flask full of Grant, also special reserve, also not that special, but it'll keep me going as well.
Well,
here's to it.
Cheers.
Oh, right, nice. Very nice.
So let's get to our main focus and something you might probably not want to binge watch in these times.
The guinea pig, the famous guinea pig series. But it's a shame in a way. Like, we don't have any sort of younger contributor, I guess, with us here. So I'm always kind of interested to know if anyone actually has much heard of the guinea pig series. Beyond, I mean, when we were, you know, younger, certainly like in sort of, it was kind of trickling to Western consciousness by sort of early 90s. You're hearing all these stories about something, you know, rumored to be snuff films, you know, or based on real life murder cases. Charlie Sheen, coked up Charlie Sheen reporting to the FBI because he thought they were real. Or, you know, some other urban legends, like after them, they were so extreme that you're banned from making a film in Japan with guinea pig in the title. Even if it was, you know, some sort of nice film about a pet.
A friendly guinea pig who befriends a family. And
exactly. I mean, you get all those cat films and dog films. So it'd be surprising. Maybe that's why there's never been a guinea pig one. Maybe there's some truth to that rumor. But you know, these films, like, they had a big impression kind of on people at the time. You know, some of these urban myths are still lurking around today, but because they've never really been widely released, you know, for a variety of reasons, and I don't think just necessarily the content. Whereas even you know, a lot of splatter fans or young gore fans and everything, you know, they're much more aware of, I think, some of the other Japanese or, you know, Category 3 things, whether it's Untold Story or through to even stuff like Red Room or some of the other Japanese, you know, gore films in the last 20 years. But I'm not sure how much guinea pig has kind of been remembered by the younger generations, or how much people have picked up.
And this is what you want to change.
I would be very happy to change that. I think these films are well deserving of cult appeal, and I think there's kind of an innocence to them, but you know, they're quite naive and charming in their own way. I mean, they're pretty daft. I mean, you know, we'll get into the evolution of the series, such as it is, and everything. But I think, you know, when you think about guinea pig, you don't really think so much of how connected they are kind of to the manga work of, like, you know, Hideyoshi Hino kind of at the time. And they are gory in their way, but they are, for me, it's more their weirdness which actually kind of carries them and everything. And it's you can even get that just from the names of the films. I mean, can you list them off? There you go. That's your first challenge. List them off. No, they don't have to be in order. we'll get to the problem with the order later. But,
well, I mean, that's the thing, is that the how they're numbered becomes a little
very, very
interesting. But yes, we've got Devil's Experiment.
Yes,
we've got Flowers of Flesh and Blood.
Flower of Flesh and Blood.
Flower of Flesh and Blood. Also known as Flowers, I think. It's got various names.
Also very possible as well.
Oh, it's got many names. We've got He Never Dies, which has got various names as well. And we have Devil Doctor Woman.
Devil Doctor Woman, I think.
The title is actually Devil Woman Doctor.
Then we've got Mermaid in a Manhole.
Yes, one more.
And Android of Notre Dame.
Android of Notre Dame. I mean, that's what I mean.
Which does feature the bells going on. And does reference them.
It does, but that's what I mean. Like, just hearing the names of those films. I mean, Android, on the one hand, we have people saying, oh, Charlie Sheen, oh my God, this is a fake snuff film. And then you think, okay, so part, whatever it is, 5 or 6, oh, the Android of Notre Dame. Like, really? You know, Mermaid in a Manhole? It doesn't really sound very snuffy. But you know, as I say, I think that's a large part of its charm. So, I mean, you also have the two making of documentaries, which again, some people rumored were created just to prove that they weren't real, which obviously is, you know, not the case. But the thing, you know, they're quite neat. All of them are what, about 45 minutes long?
45 to 55, I think.
Yeah, like that. And they started about 1985. I think the last one was technically was in 1990. See, it's quite a nice, you know, quite compact series, which does, you know, is very diverse, but still kind of fits together very well.
So, do you want to give a bit of background to these films?
Sure. I mean, I started getting into them myself, kind of in the mid, sort of early 90s, where there was still some sort of VHS a bit going around. And the first one I saw was definitely Flare of Flesh and Blood. Which would have been on like a very like third or fourth generation VHS from a car boot. No, not a car boot sale, a record fair sale, one in Glasgow I got it from. And it's the same thing, you know, at that age, you know, I was outright terrified
before they do I watched feel, it. Particularly some of the first couple of films actually feel like they benefit from looking really quite ropey. Absolutely. And like several generation copies of videos, and it kind of makes them...
Yeah, you feel like you found something. You feel like you found something. You've got the Unearthed DVD and the German set. I've got, you know, they're great sets, and it's great that they're on
DVD. I mean, they don't look amazing because they're all shot on video. So
yeah, but they still clean them up quite a lot compared to, or at least the memories I have of having watched them. But then when I watched Flare and Flesh and Blood, you know, probably waiting for the police to kick in the door and grab me or something. But, you know, when watching the mad, grainy and everything, obviously no subtitles or anything. There was kind well, you don't really need anything. But then you did really have, like, that experience that you kind of discovered something either illegal or something kind of dangerous when you were watching it. And I think maybe for that older generation, maybe it ties into that kind of tape trading type of thing and everything still, which you don't have so much now.
Let's kind of go into as much as we can in terms of the background of the films. They were released on video to the straight to video
market
in Japan, which is kind of quite different from what we had in the UK.
Yeah, obviously in the States you had a lot of direct to video stuff, especially, you know, in the horror genre and everything. But you did have that whole sort of V cinema tradition in Japan, which, you know, I admit I don't know a great deal about and everything, but I think with these films, you know, having watched the making of docs and everything, I don't think any of these were commercially designed to kind of fit in with the V-cinema thing. You know, and reading interviews with Hideyoshi Hino about it does seem to have been a genuine desire to actually... The lens just kind of fitted what they were doing. It's been, certainly for the first two, for Devil's Experiment, which in some... You know, there's not much gore in the Devil's Experiment, but it is probably, I think, the nastiest one, the most disturbing one, just because it's semi-believable and you only get bits of special effects towards the end. You know, a group of... it's not even clear who they are, like thugs, you know, kidnapping a girl off the street. Then going through like a very mechanical series of tortures with her from...
With title cards for each...
With title cards, yes, exactly. And hit.
Pinch or pinch, something. And it kind of scales up. I can't remember what they call the swirling, the chair around.
They make her drink whatever alcohol is spinning around. You get the sound torture, you get thrown maggots and everything, pliers. And then, of course, we kind of get the eyeball and everything. But that's... It's almost kind of static camera shot, everything like that. And it is, there's no plot, no explanation, almost no dialogue apart from some shouting, as you say, the title cards.
And stuff that actually is meant to look like proper video footage as well, which is quite interesting considering when it was done that they
definitely
tried to make it look like a almost authentic snuff movie.
Yeah. I think so, and I think it was more that which was important to them.
And I think, I've read up on a few of these bits, because never having watched the series until the last few days.
My urging.
So the first one was very, very successful. I read that it was kind of more successful than sort of E.T. and stuff like that in the video shops.
But it kind of went along with things like Cannibal Holocaust.
Well, Faces of Death was more... Yeah. Well, this is probably not true, but even when I was young, I was always told that Faces of Death was more popular than Star Wars in Japan. Probably absolute horseshit, but it's... I don't know. It's a funny story, even if it's not true. So, yeah, I didn't know that before what you were saying there, but similar story, I guess. But
then, so there's a big audience for this, for video. I mean, the same way there was in the UK for... I mean, we lost
our
it
because... Video Nasties.
The Video Nasties.
Ban the sick filth.
Exactly. No, and half the films not being
actually
at all offensive.
No.
None of them are probably all on
several are 15 rated and everything as well.
Probably so. 12. Some of them are PG now, I think.
But I agree. It was kind of a similar thing. I think people were just pushing at what the envelope, seeing what they could actually achieve with it. And again, watching the documentaries, the making ofs and everything, they're clearly very enthusiastic into the kind of, you know, the kind of that kind of aesthetic, both trying to recreate the look and feel of the stuff, but doing it on the cheap just because that's you didn't have much money. Seeing what special effects they could get away with.
I'm also actually going the very much of a Bangor kind of generation of being really into that sort of Contadini, Baker kind of.
It kind of reminds me of stuff like which, you know, other sort of, you know, proper, well, not proper, but, you know, narrative, semi narrative horrors, like Evil Dead Trap and stuff like that, which, you know, had a clear link back to those films and to, you know, the Italian, you know, the Fulci, Argento, whatnot, and everything. So I agree. I think it falls into that, which is, again, which is kind of nice, I think, which is a strange thing to say about guinea pig. But I think,
as you were saying before, it's kind of, it's quite, it is almost kind of naive and innocent. It's a very kind of, mainly kind of youthful filmmakers who are quite
enthusiastic, man. They're loving it. They're into it, man.
Quite nerdy, really.
Very nerdy. But they're not, you know, we'll talk through the rest of the films, but none of them are actually, I mean, they're very nasty in a sort of gore way, technically, if you really think about it. But you don't have the kind of, you know, the sexual sadism you'd have in some of the later extreme gore films coming from Japan, whether it's the Red Room films or even some Category 3 stuff, which could be really, really misogynistic. Whereas these are, I'm not saying it makes them any better, but there's almost like a weird nihilism to them.
Yeah.
You know, the things just kind of happen, but they're not, there's no nudity, they're not rapey, there's no effort to titillate. The camera most of the time just sits there and these things just kind of happen. For, you know, for better or worse, I'm not trying to necessarily justify them in that way, but, and I think that kind of became slightly more problematic when you came to the second one, you know, Flower of Flesh and Blood, which was directed by, you know, Hino. He appears in it himself, and he really just had that idea of making this into kind of, it's kind of a weird, almost meta fake snuff film, because it, you know, it's one like a manga artist receives a tape from a crazed fan and he's like, oh my god, I'm so shocked, this is a real murder. So he has to recreate that.
He has some kind of warning that he can't show it anywhere. So he
recreates it, but at the same time it kind of vaguely suggests that he might be recreating it as in actually doing it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, which is kind
which
of
is, which
cool.
Which is not, you know, having read a couple of the stories from his actual manga, it's quite, he does the stuff that is quote unquote autobiographical.
Oh yeah, he's always breaking the fourth wall and stuff, everything. So, you know, his, and I really like his manga stuff, which is, you haven't read a huge amount compared to other horror mangas I've read, but yeah, it fits in very well with his kind of thing. And I think, it doesn't make it clear whether the recreation is supposed to be, you know, this is just a fake to show you what was in the video, or this is, yeah, I'm recreating it myself. It's never clear, which is quite cool. But it's, you know, that again, it's another one with no plot, which was directly, you know, he deliberately didn't want to have a plot, you know, dude in the samurai costume, or just mechanically torture as well, making a lot of weird grimaces and spouting a lot of nonsense, you know, takes this poor girl apart in various ways till he seems to think it's very beautiful and everything. But it was, you know, you had all the controversies around that film, and I think probably even more than like the first film, that's the one where people say guinea pig, they mean Flower of Flesh and Blood. I think you can say that, and that's the one which was, you know, Perrault coked up. Well, I'm not gonna say he was definitively coked up, but Charlie Sheen reported to the FBI everything is being real and they investigated, but it did have the connections. Not proper connections, but, you know, the real life, you know, Otako murder case in Japan, which was Tsutomu Miyazaki. And the police had brought in Hino to, before they actually caught him, you know, they brought him to help sort of profile a killer, or at least just to discuss getting into a killer's mind, at which point, you know, he'd already made Flower of Flesh and Blood, so he showed it to them, And, you know, not too long later, they caught the killer, and that's when they started calling him the Itako murderer. We're not really going to go into what he did, because it's more than just horrific, I guess, but, you know, with a bunch of schoolgirls and stuff. But then, you know, they found, 5,763 videos, horror videos mostly, in his place. And then you started getting rumors saying, oh, the main one was like Flower, Flesh and Blood. Although Hino himself said, no, that's not true. They found, and this is where it gets more complicated, they found the fourth one in the series, which he had nothing to do with. Though in the release list, certainly in the West, the fourth one listed is Mermaid in a Manhole, which he did direct. But most people would say the sixth one and the fourth one should actually be reversed. So we think Devil Woman Doctor is the fourth one.
So, which would be an... We'll come to it, but it would be an interesting influence.
Yeah, so that kind of thing is interesting. But then there was a whole moral panic around the guinea pig films, which, at that time.
Coming back to Video Nasties.
Yeah, it's a similar thing.
And comes back to... You get these moral outrages all the time, all the kind of horror comics.
Absolutely. And he ticked both boxes, because he was, horror manga. And his manga is incredibly... it's graphic.
It's graphic and it's grim.
It's ghoulishly...
Yeah.
He takes a sort of ghoulish glee to most of the stuff. So they were pulling all his manga at the time. So the films were getting in trouble. Were getting yanked out and everything like that. And then it was never actually clear if there was a proper connection between anything the killer thought or, anything. So that went on for a while. And then after that, the Japanese media started interviewing Hino, and... You get some pretty funny quotes and everything in there from him, where he's 100% unrepentant about it. And the best one is still the one where some news media guys, doing an interview on the air with him or something, and saying like, at least American horror films, Hollywood horror films, they have some kind of plot, they have some kind of emotion and themes and everything. And he's like, how dare you say my work is inferior to that of a Hollywood horror? he was pure raging about it. And then he was actually asked about the FBI connection through Charlie Sheen and everything, that he's saying, well, great, I consider my film a great success now. So and he's like a teacher now, teaching something about character studies or something like that at one of the universities in Japan. So he's obviously, it's not had any negative effects on him by the sound of it. But the guys I think who made the films, he made some of them, but the general group of guys who are making them, there does seem to be that kind of enthusiasm for this kind of, what do you call it, a gore genre. I don't want to call these films like torture porn, because I don't think they really fit. They fit in the very basic description, but they're not, there's nothing supposed to be titillating about them. It's more just like a celebration of the special effects and the ghoulishness of it all. But I think reading some of his interviews, and you're right, there's not a massive amount of material out there, which surprises me a little bit. And I think most of the stuff out there does, you said to me before, does seem to draw upon the same sources.
Yeah.
So most of the articles or reviews and stuff basically kind of repeat what's already been said by stuff. So it would be interesting if someone ever one time really sort of dive deeply into them. Well, interesting for people like us, I guess. Whether it be interesting for, non-fans, probably maybe not so much and everything, but...
You'd probably still shift a few copies.
Like three or four, maybe, if we sold them down the Bow Bells. But... But I think after Flower of Flesh and Blood, that's where they go properly weird. And I think for a lot of people who do think of Guinea Pig as, Flower or maybe the first two films, would be pretty surprised if they saw the next ones. He never dies, which wasn't, and basically a salaryman who's kind of comically depressed and decides to kill himself by slitting his wrists and, blood everywhere, but then wakes up, he's not dead. Oh shit, what's he gonna do? Tries to kill himself in a bunch of other ways. It doesn't work. And so
for a prank, he invites his mates around.
That's brilliant.
Just to show him what he can do.
It's outstanding. And they're like, they can't believe what's going on. It's hilarious. And it's the first time I saw that, was there was quite a distance between when I saw the second one and then when I saw the rest of the series. And again, I was expecting something really nasty. I saw a couple of the pictures from it and I said, whoa, this is going to be sick, man. It just goes off into genuinely sort of surreal comedy. Maybe even like a touch of satire to the whole salaryman thing. He wants to end it, but he just, no matter what he does, he can't. So in the end, yeah, he just goes wacky with it. And he just ends up as a head at the end, I think, right?
That's right, yeah. So he invites his mate round and his girlfriend. And his girlfriend's immediate reaction is to start cleaning up. Very bizarre.
Fair enough. But
I mean, with that one, and I think it's kind of true of Flower as well, to a certain extent. But it's interesting, kind of the manga connection, because I think from that one on, all the stories actually really do remind me of the sort of the horror comics, Vault of Horror, Tales from the Crypt, and the Atlas comics, Strange Tales. They've really got that feel, and sometimes because of that, they actually, because they're about 40-odd minutes, 50-odd minutes, sometimes watching them through, actually I kind of feel a little bit long, that actually sort of 25 minutes would have been a perfect kind of
because you get sort of plots from He Never Dies onwards, but it's not rude to say they're half-assed plots. They're just still a structure to hang around these sort of increasingly wacky and outrageous gore gags. But the special effects are, for practical effects, they're pretty good. You know, a lot of effort actually went into them and stuff.
It's quite interesting because one of the guys on one of the making of documentaries, going back to this kind of nerdy thing where they're really celebrating kind of old school effects.
Yes.
And you can see from all the footage, they're really loving trying to do stuff and working. Half the time, they might shoot it over a few days, but half of those days is them thinking about how they can do stuff.
And that's what I was sort of saying before. On the one hand, you think these films are showing atrocities and whatnot. But on the other hand, maybe it's just influences because we see these documentaries. Maybe if you didn't see them, it might be different. But yeah, they're loving it, man. They're so enthusiastic and they're just... There's nothing else. Oh, we have to terrify people. It's more just, oh, we've got to, how are you going to get this effect going?
And part of that, one of the guys on those documentaries is obviously one of the lead special effects persons on them.
Yeah.
And they've got quite a big crew.
That's quite a few.
But, he's talking about the end of Japanese gore movies and kind of lamenting it and how there needs to be more. But there was one master of it that they've lost. And it's kind of, again, we're back to sort of nerd territory.
But that's really nice. And it does. Yeah. I think that really comes through in the films. Especially when we get to these next four, that the level of weirdness or kookiness to them far outweighs... And there is nastiness if you take it out of context, I think. But as you exactly agree what you're saying about the easy comics kind of style to it and everything, they're not doing this to try and appall people or anything like that. A few shocks, a bit of the old ghoulishness and gore, man. They're just into it. And from then on, it just gets...
It's crazier. Kind of keeping... Because then we're going to talk about Devil Doctor Woman, but it's talking about the kind of behind
the
scenes.
I was going to go for Mermaid next. But.
Ah, okay.
Still.
But one of the other kind of behind the scenes shots I thought was probably most interesting. So they're all doing this funny stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a bit where the Devil Doctor Woman drops a cat, and you can see it's a live cat into a bin. And it looks, because you can see it's a live cat, and it's just kind of candidly just drops it into a bin. It looks really shocking.
Yeah.
But on the behind the scenes footage, about 15 people run on.
That's right.
To kind of check the cat's all right, and there's a woman who's just kind of cradling it.
The cat doesn't look perturbed in the least.
No, not at all. Obviously lots of cushions, but
it does.
But typical kind of Japanese sensibility towards the cat. So it's actually no cat was harmed in the making of this.
They probably did have great discussions and everything. Maybe a few practices with a pillow and everything like that. But that's a very good way to sum it up, I think. And it's, apart from the general point that, I remember reading one review about one of, I forget which even one it was, that said, the minds behind this series must have been seriously twisted, evil people. No, clearly not. They were just having a bit of fun.
Yeah.
As much as anything. But Devil Woman Doctor, we can go to that one next. It's always been the last one I saw just because of, the Western sort of listing and everything. But it is... I think it might be the weirdest one out of all of them.
So that has a drag artist,
Peter? Peter, yeah. He was apparently quite famous at the time. who's in it. And it's just, part of it's almost...
It's just basically a kind of series. In a weird way, it's kind of skits.
TV skits. That's probably the best way to describe it, where he's...
Just doing random things, and quite often just... There's quite a few scenes where people are just sitting down, you know, and there's patients and their heads blow up or something.
With various ailments and everything. Yeah. He's
an underground doctor who underground obviously isn't very good at his profession.
And it's supposed to, and it's not clear whether it's supposed to be funny that it's like incompetence resulting in like mutilations or injuries. It's not. Nothing about it is ever. There's no context or anything, like whether this is he's doing it on purpose to be sadistic or whether she's doing it by mistake or whether it's supposed to be funny. It's a very surreal one.
I mean, some of them are quite a lot, they do feel quite a lot like part of the guinea pig series. Some of them are just quite random. So the pet one leads to the strange organs that have been left behind as a pet, and they start chasing this woman. And I guess sort of, for some reason, because it kind of starts in the sort of subway kind of area, it reminded me of something I was kind of thought, Possessed when I was watching.
Possessed with old Sam Neill.
Yeah. A horrible scene in Possessed with.
Yes. I remember that. Yeah. No, sure. But it's just surreal wacky. But that stage.
Yeah. It's just kind of.
Surreal wackiness at that stage. And again, imagine if you saw somebody who was morally outraged just by the thought of like the first two films and you show them this. I'm not even sure they would necessarily connect them with the same series.
Yeah, there's one guy who's got a being that's living in his stomach, and then he ends up as a hip hop dancer.
Yeah, and then the whole thing feels.
And there's another guy who's got some strange Jekyll and Hyde kind of condition.
They're not even proper illness. When I read about that from before I saw it, I thought it was going to be some like medical experiments or some kind of Men Behind the Sun type stuff. But no, they're patients, but they're not one thing about it even attempts to be serious, which is fine. And again, with the short length, I mean, like you say, maybe probably could be a little shorter, but there you can easily put it on, and it's kind of fun, and you know, it's I can't really imagine anyone ever being offended by Devil Woman Doctor. If you are, then that's kind of a shame, to be honest. But it's I don't know. It kind of indicates how the series actually went after that. I mean,
and then things get very strange, don't they?
So we're gonna go Android next, then I suppose. If we're flipping 4 and 6, not that it matters, but I just saw like Devil Woman Doctor was the strangest. Nah, I'm gonna go with Android as the strangest. you kind of have the dwarf doctor whose sister's got a terminal illness.
Yeah.
So he needs body to experiment on. Not really that sure why. I mean, experiment on a dead body to cure a disease in a living person, I'm not sure. But it all goes wrong.
It all goes horribly wrong. There's this kind of weird thing where it looks like they're trying very hard to replicate the old Pinhead from Hellraiser.
And that was kind of on the box art, or some of the releases was that. Yeah. Which was even more confusing for what you're supposed to expect before you saw this film. So, but yeah, you have the head with the pins in it and everything, and he does his business and he ruins it and he gets another one, right? And there's nothing.
And so, that's somebody who's black. Well, without going into the story, no spoilers.
Somebody who's
blackmailing him because they know why he's getting all these bits. Exactly. But then that doesn't seem to go terribly well either.
No, it's just it's not even like a proper comedy of error. It's more like it's just incompetence, which just leads to another piece of incompetence. And I get, but the special effects again are pretty good in it, and I just don't know what they're aiming at with that one. Even Devil Woman Doctor, thinking about it, you can kind of see some vague, satire, sort of splattery satire maybe in it, but Android, I mean, what were they going for with that one? What was the demographic for that one?
It's very strange.
But I would, actually, I mean, my favourite from the whole series is Mermaids in a Manhole.
It's the return of Hino.
That was him, and I think that's the one which is closest to his manga. He had quite a few. He had quite a few stories, and I've only read a small part of his works. So even in that small
body, they're very much his kind of. Yeah, the lead person is a horror writer or an artist, or they are a manga artist.
It's always to do with like art and finding this kind of beauty and disease and decay and everything
and success.
And success, yeah.
And but not in this.
Not in this one, but. I remember like another of his stories where it is, you know, just some, it's in old times in Japan, rural village, where a guy just starts getting all these boils and everything over his body, and he's ostracized from the village, and everything just gets worse, and where he gradually rots away, and he starts bursting the boils and like drawing things with them, and he gradually rots away, and then he turns into a turtle.
And there's There's definitely some boils and using them as paints. And
but I think Mermaid's got a nice story too, and it was originally, interestingly, it was originally supposed to be a feature, like a proper film, but because of the, you know, some of the problems with the guinea pig thing, then they had to stop that and actually just make it like another, you know, another short one. But it's a sad story, you know. The artist guy finds the mermaid, not sure quite how he gets her home, but gets her home, and then she's obviously rotting away still, and then uses the pus and the blood and all the various weird liquids which start leaking from her to do a painting of her, and when she rots even more. It's quite sad, like.
Yeah.
And I think the effects are very good for that, because they are more, not fantasy, but they are slightly more bizarre, I think, the effects in that one. And there's no, again, there's not, it's gruesome, but it's kind of, again, it's a weird word for a guinea pig film, but kind of poetic in a way. I did find that quite moving. You know, and the effects are very good for that one as well. But it's everything, the whole aesthetic is very dingy. I mean, you've got her kind of rotting, but everything around it is just, there's a state of decay through everything to that film, you know. Yeah. But I do think more people should know about them. I mean, they've certainly...
What do you think about the kind of... I mean, obviously, you've got all these elements. Do you think that there is a legacy to these films? Because I kind of feel like...
That's a very tough question.
But I feel like some of the torture stuff, some of the early films, you can kind of see, and maybe it's a taking from different references, but you can kind of feel a bit of that in Audition.
I don't know. I'm not sure, because that came from a book. So I genuinely don't know, because what we can kind of say is, and I'm not going to call myself an exhaustive expert on this, but you know, I'm pretty familiar with extreme Japanese cinema on the horror side of things, you know, on the gore side of things. And even when we get into the All Night Longs or the Red Rooms and whatnot, to me they seem more influenced by sort of Pinku cinema, especially in terms of their lengths and everything like that, and their kind of structure, which are more like, in a lot of ways, like a sex film where you just replace the sex with violence and torture and everything.
Well, because Pinkies have very strict rules. What I find quite interesting with the guinea pig is actually it kind of creates, for most of the films, it actually creates a similar thing where somebody gets chopped up at a certain point. Their intestines will be coming out at a certain point. Then we kind of get to the eye bit.
And there's always an eye bit. You've got to have an eye bit.
Exception, because it's not that kind of narrative, Devil Doctor Woman. Pretty much all of them actually have that same little kind of...
That's true.
That kind of structure to it.
To my knowledge, nobody's really copied that kind of in Japan. It would be surprising if there was no influence, unless those films were just so hard to get hold of. I don't really know, but there's been no direct
references made
or directors talking about them.
On one side, it's kind of directly in Japan in terms of special effects. You do think about the guys that made the Tokyo Ghoul Police, Meatball Machine films.
Yoshiro Nishimura.
Noboru Iguchi.
Yeah.
Yuda Yamaguchi.
But those films, that's what I mean. Like, those films, and it would be interesting to talk to those guys who've asked them that question, but I've never seen any link. I don't feel any link between them. To me, that seems like a very... I mean, I love those films as well. I really enjoy those films, but I don't see or feel like a link between that. I mean, I think, as we said before, like, the guinea pigs films seem very rooted in that sort of, you know, horror manga tradition. Whereas these other ones are kind of a lot wilder, a lot kind of, you know, more perverted, I guess, in a way than guinea pig. Which, again, is me calling guinea pig kind of sweet, innocent, poor, naive guinea pig. You know, but you know what I mean?
Do you think it has an influence? I mean, particularly thinking about some of the weirder entries in the later part as well. You think it kind of has influence on, almost kind of felt to me a little bit like House of a Thousand Corpses and Rob Zombie. Again, we don't know who saw what and what.
That would be more likely. Or, I mean, in some ways, because, you know, himself, you know, he did dip into directing and stuff more and everything that, you know, kind of linked to his own manga. And you've had some lower key adaptations of, like, you know, Junji Ito stuff. And I think you've seen quite a few of these sort of, not V-cinema, because they were too modern for that, but, like, you know, Japanese, like, low budget anthology horror series, which kind of go through similar, they're not gory like the guinea pig ones, but they go through kind of similar structures, you know, like 45 minute, 50 minute length, everything, which kind of builds they don't build towards a twist, but they just kind of like revel in sort of ghoulishness on a lower level. So I don't think there's an influence, and that's kind of what's I think in a way very mysterious and interesting about the Guinea Pig series. I mean, most other series, especially one, whether it's our generation or other people, something so notorious and which had this kind of attention, like it seems to have, you know, been forgotten or ignored kind of in a way, which is a real shame considering the work and everything which went into it. And, you know, Hideyoshi Hino probably isn't. I mean, Junji Ito, a lot more people know him than...
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a bit... Because of the Tomai and Spiral.
Yeah. He's great, Junji Ito. Nothing, not to say a bad word about him at all, but I think Guinea Pig, I don't really know why it is not as... I don't want to say popular, but why it's not as revered as revered as it should be. Because to me, that I think it should be an influence. So maybe that is just, I suppose back in those days, you know, it was a lot easier to kind of like take VHS out of circulation in pre-YouTube days. When we were talking like a good long, you know, back in the mid-80s, you were talking like a good long while before it kind of became available. And because it was obviously in Japan, it wasn't like the video nasties we were getting, which were a lot easier to create copies of, and then the DVD era came and everything. Whereas in Japan, there probably wasn't a massive commercial demand to actually kind of make a DVD series of, you know, the Guinea Pig films when the technology and everything was available. So a lot of it might just come down to access and people not being aware of them. Because, you know, they certainly were taken out of stores for a while and everything. So maybe that's just it. Maybe a lot of people genuinely just aren't as aware of it. And hopefully after listening to this podcast, people are going to go out and... But even now, it's not even that easy to get hold of, apart from the Unearthed set, I guess, or the German one I've got. Like, it's not massively easy to get. I don't think there is like other official ones from other countries you could actually get hold of. So, it's a shame.
It's not one, but it is quite well known.
I mean, for, you know, if anyone who's listening, if you want to add a comment, have you actually heard of the Guinea Pig series? Mm. You know, there's no prize, but it would be genuinely very interesting to know within the sort of demographic of people who enjoy Japanese horror or Japanese splatter, if you're aware, you know, or if what we've been talking about here is kind of news to people about the whole series, or if they just think this was some urban legend that these films existed, which, you know, even I kind of vaguely did until I got the first tape and watched it and everything, you know. Even like Untold Story was something which is more concrete, which actually existed.
Yeah,
Guinea Pig was still kind of like, hey, Guinea Pig, man, it's out there somewhere. Dare you watch it? And maybe that's that, you know, it's that kind of whole Ring thing of watching some weird shitty quality VHS, thinking someone's going to knock on your door and phone you and say, what are you doing? You know, whether it's your parents or the police coming in the middle and trying to justify, you know?
Or giving you a phone call 7 days later.
and saying, like, going to send it back, mate.
You get fined.
Have you watched it all? Or Sadako's going to fine you, so I'll be there in a week. I'll be finished them, don't worry, man. But it's a shame, because I genuinely think, although they're super low budget and... Yeah, the content could be a bit questionable. I do think there's a real craft to the Guinea Pig films, and whether that's initially the craft of doing the kind of fake snuff movie thing, or later on getting to the more weird sort of manga side of things. In every single one of them, you know, there's a dedication to creating the special effects, doing them properly. As you said, like genuinely discussing the stuff, and they really were doing what they really were passionate about doing with these films. And when considering what they were making and how unlikely it was they'd ever actually...
And I just think they have such fun on set kind of doing it as well. You kind of like, you know, going back to Devil Doctor Woman. But, you know, one of the shooting is and if you watch them, it is worth watching the making of.
Definitely.
Because you kind of get more of the fun behind it. But, you know, like they're producing it by a river and, you know, one of the guys makes himself some swimming trunks out of a bin bag and he's going sunbathing and they're all in the river just having fun and throwing water at each other and kind of, it's just kind of weird.
It's hilarious. But I fully admit, though, that's probably one of the reasons why, you know, if all we were doing was maybe we just saw, you know, Flower, Flesh and Blood, by itself, no context, we might be like, fuck, man, what is this? But now we've seen the whole series, you've seen the making of Docs. There's a context, and they're a really nice context, I think. But yeah, maybe if Charlie Sheen had seen the Docs, maybe he wouldn't have called the FBI. He might still have done it, if it depends how much coke he was on at the time, what he was doing. But it would be nice. Yeah, I would like to see more people knowing a bit about the Guinea Pigs. I mean, they're never going to be for mass consumption, but I think some of the other stuff which has cult status and everything, it would be nice to see Guinea Pig up there like a little bit at least. So maybe I'll Maybe I'll make a film and name check guinea pig one day. You know.
Hi, my name is Paul, and I run the Korean Film Review and Director, Cast and Crew Interview website, angleselluloid.com. I've also had some of my writing published in Intellect's books, The Directory of World Cinema South Korea, and this is how I got into Eastern flicks. I guess my obsession with Korean cinema started when I moved from Northern Ireland to London to study music. I was getting increasingly frustrated with Hollywood and its lackluster predictability and its focus on commercialism above depth. And having grown up with TV shows on terrestrial TV like Monkey and The Water Margin, Asian cinema seemed to be the way to go. At that time, I wasn't aware whether things came from Korea or Japan or China or wherever. I was attracted by story rather than culture. But the big changing point for me came when I watched Kim Jun's A Tale of Two Sisters from 2003. Not only did it blow my mind, and not only did I instantly watch it a second time as soon as the credits started to roll, but for the first time, I chose to look on the back of the DVD to see where it had come from. And seeing it was from Korea, I instantly went through my entire DVD collection to see where all the other exemplary Asian films I liked the most came from. And each and every one came from Korea. And that was me hooked. At that time, I was already running a small review website under a different name, which I just essentially reviewed whatever took my fancy. And after A Tale of Two Sisters, I reviewed, I think, five or six Korean films in a row. And a colleague at one point just said, "How come you only review Korean films?" And the penny dropped. And not only did I know that Korean films were the only things I wanted to review, but I also felt that reviewing Korean film was kind of what I was supposed to do. And it's what I'm still doing today.
So now it's time for Eastern Kicks Picks.
Boom.
And what have you got for us this time, James?
Well, for all this, people staying at home, which I assume in the future, by the time this is edited online, I assume everyone's still going to be stuck at home. So we're speaking to you from the future now. But a couple of good things like coming is, I'm not sure exactly when it was added to Amazon, but I just found it yesterday through the logics of their search engine. The Witch Part 1 Subversion. The Korean film, which did the festival circuit last year for quite a while.
Is it on there as The Witch?
No, it's just The Witch. Yeah. And when I have to say, like, before, I've heard of this film, it was going around the circuit, and I'd seen the Korean poster for it, and it looked supremely uninteresting. It was kind of like the three faces on a poster, young teen stars looking like vaguely shocked, mouth open. And somebody told me it was like some kind of X-Men Korean like type thing knockoff. So I didn't pay too much attention to it. I didn't even realize it was the same guy who did like New World. Wrote I Saw the Devil, probably still one of the best Korean films of all time. But I watched it last night and it's an amazing film. It's incredibly violent. It's incredibly bloody. I mean, there is, I guess I can vaguely get the X-Men connection because, I'm not going to say anything about it. It's kind of like a psychic kids and teenagers, but use the powers in probably the most violent ways you can imagine. Head crushings, like, there's a lot of You've Got Red on You kind of in there all the way through, man. It's a really cool film, and it's got like a really, I don't really understand why it's called The Witch, because there's no witches in it and there's no real subversion in it, but there is like about two-thirds of the way through the film it does suddenly like change entirely what you know about the film in a really, really cool, entertaining way. Then the last one-third of the film was like, fuck. Everything suddenly accelerates in a different direction. And it's very well made, incredibly gory. But the special effects are, it's a mixture of practical and kind of like a CGI effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, can't recommend it highly enough. It came as a real surprise to me actually watching it,
And good news, I mean, the thing that I remember, because it's been hovering around for a couple of years really, effectively, is the whole Subversion Part 1, but there wasn't any idea of there being a Part 2, but it seems that
it's listed. I mean, from what I checked, there's certainly...
Only just, though, I think.
It's still listed for 2020, and I guess we have to hope with this, devil virus that it'll still be going ahead. But, without saying too much about it, it is clearly structured to be like a two-part film. And it's, no, I think when you watch it on Amazon or some other channels, the actress, I think she won quite a few awards for her name, Kim Dami. She's outstanding. I mean, her performance, I got to say, that is one of the best performances from a young Korean actress I've seen in many, many years. Properly off the hook in many places. That's such a good, it's one of those films where like I kind of want to talk about it more to say what actually happens in it, but I'm not going to because I can't even say what kind of twist it is, but it's outstanding film. 100% recommend, whether it's the Amazon or whether you find it somewhere else, man. You should definitely check out The Witch Part 1, the subversion. I don't know what Part 2 is going to be, but you know, 100% recommend.
What's the opposite of subversion?
Tutoring? I don't know. Academia? Another, the other, I guess, more obvious topic would be Kingdom Season 2, which just dropped on Netflix a few days ago.
You know, and we mentioned this easily last episode as well, but you know, the question is, does Season 2 deliver?
No doubt, man. It's fucking, it's amazing. It's a fucking great second. Second season is always going to be difficult.
Mm.
You've kind of got what made the first season successful, and you got a kind of choice, kind of Stranger Things dilemma. Do you just do exactly the same thing again, or do you shake it up? Do you go and, man, again, I'm not going to say anything about this, especially because I'm not going to spoil season one.
And then you also, when you get to season two, you've got that whole thing about thinking about how many seasons you might want to do with a game without giving too many spoilers.
No, but it's again, it's that question of like, you know, sticking to what made the first thing popular. And you know, you have to assume with this kind of thing, they had a scheme for like going on longer.
Mm.
But you have to like develop, expand both the characters and narrative. And you know, again, I'm treading lightly here, but like people who were smaller characters in the first one, and you maybe thought, oh, that's okay, that's not a very deeply written character. You know, you'll see some character investment really paying off. And, again, very, very well acted. Very different rhythm to the series compared to the first season. But it builds very, very well. Some excellent scheming, man. I thought the political, like, the court intrigue in the first was great. In the second one, it's super great, man.
Yeah.
It gives, you know, some of the stuff which happens is there's some proper ill scheming in there. I've had a bunch of drinks, so I'm not going to say too much, but bottom line, outstanding series. I think not just like one of the best Korean series, this is one of the best series on Netflix or other ones I've watched in the last year or so. And even like binging like the 6 hours of this new season, man, it just, the hours just flew by. So highest recommendation, especially during these virusy times and everything. You know, you could do a hell of a lot worse than sitting down and watching it, apart from the fact that, you know, it is probably going to go on for more series and everything like that. And, you know, hopefully we won't have too long to wait for the next one. But no, Kingdom is quickly proving itself like a, and I hope like a very long-term thing as well. It's one of the best seasons on there.
Cool.
Very nice.
So that's it for this episode. If you've got ideas for anything we should cover in the future, do let us know. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest,
LinkedIn.
And LinkedIn as well. It's all there.
WeChat, probably.
You can try it. Yeah. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify.
Boom.
But for now,
tell your friends, tell all your friends.
But for now, this is time for us to say adieu.
And stay healthy.
And stay healthy for everyone. Healthy. Yeah.
Here you go. Cheers.
Cheers. Goodbye. Goodbye.